Then, as part of this undeclared war, a secret decision is taken to slow down financing on the Aswan Dam. Anthony Eden and the US Secretary of State, John Foster Dulles, are behind the new strategy.
I think Dulles was angry with Nasser for having almost flaunted his independence. I really think that Dulles believed that Nasser's behavior was almost a personal affront to him.
In London, Eden's mistrust of Nasser is increased by some mysterious intelligence reports which have just landed on his desk. They are from an MI6 contact known as Lucky Brake. Lucky Brake tells Eden that Nasser is a pawn of the Soviet Union and the Egyptian people will welcome his overthrow.
From reading the reports that MI6 is giving to British officials and giving to the Americans, I think they are taking a few sources and they are sexing them up. No one individual could have provided the information that Nasser was so close to the Soviets, that Nasser was so vulnerable to being overthrown, if not assassinated, because that was not true. That simply was not true.
But Lucky Brake is telling the British Prime Minister what he wants to hear.
The firm attitude that the government have adopted is not a...
Foreign Office Minister Anthony Nutting is one of the first to realize just how far the Prime Minister is now prepared to go.
Over an open line, having just said, "It's me." But we started a violent argument on the telephone, and he was really violent in that conversation. Ended up by shouting at me, "I don't want Nasser neutralized, I want him destroyed."
There were two people in the whole conversation, Eden and Nutting. Nutting said subsequently that Eden had said murder.
Operatives within MI6 take the Prime Minister at his word.
What you have is a Thomas Becket situation where Eden says, "Will someone not make me rid of this turbulent Nasser?"
I'm not exaggerating. Nearly every month, there was an attempt against Nasser from the West, either French or British or Israelis. Nearly every month.
As Nasser was making a public speech in Alexandria, a young man fired 8 bullets at him. All missed the premier, but 2 of his aides were wounded.
The planes just are wildly out of control, putting nerve gas into the ventilation system of Nasser's headquarters, trying to put poison into Nasser's coffee, trying at some point to possibly shoot Nasser. If Lucky Brake did not exist in 1956, he would have had to be created to justify their extravagant plans to get rid of Nasser.
On the 19th of July, 1956, the Egyptian ambassador to the USA is called into the State Department. He is informed that the financing of the Aswan Dam is cancelled. If the West can't assassinate Nasser, then they will destroy his dreams to develop Egypt. To add insult to injury, President Nasser only learns of the decision from the radio news.
I was surprised by the insultive attitude which the refusal was declared. Not by the refusal itself, but the insultive attitude which meant humiliation.
Now Nasser has 2 choices. He can meekly accept the West's punishment, or he can fight. 3 days later, he gathers his most trusted lieutenants together.
President Nasser ordered me to bring him the file of the Suez Canal. And he told me, "What about nationalizing this canal?" I got surprised my first time. But internally in myself, I got proud to think about this action at that time. I felt proud.
NASA calculates that the Aswan Dam can still be built if the tolls of ships transiting the Suez Canal come to Egypt and not the British and French-controlled Suez Canal Company. But NASA knows that nationalization is a huge risk. He will have to physically seize control of the canal itself. The next day, he is scheduled to make his first speech since his humiliation at the hands of the West. All Egypt waits for his response. The speech is an anticlimax.
It was all rhetoric, and the reaction of the Egyptians was, oh, he hasn't got the balls to really stand up to the United States.
But afterwards, NASA orders an old military colleague, Mahmoud Yunis, to mastermind the dangerous job of taking physical control of the canal. Yunis selects 30 men he can trust.
Yunis emphasized that if this piece of news is released, then it will surely not succeed.
3 days later, NASA is scheduled to speak publicly again. The men know their cue for action is a password hidden in the president's speech, which will be carried on Egyptian radio. The password is the name of the man who designed the canal, Ferdinand de Lesseps. As they wait, they still don't know if their president has definitely decided to take the gamble.
My feelings were a combination of first fear and, of course, the sense of responsibility is tremendous.
In the stifling July heat, NASA makes his way to Alexandria's Manshia Square, where he is to deliver his speech. Once again, his people wait to hear if he will respond to the West's denial of funding for the Aswan Dam. At 9 p.m., NASA climbs the podium. The speech is long. NASA catalogues the centuries of humiliations the Egyptians have suffered at the hands of the West. His tone is measured, but angry. On the canal, Ezzet and his men are in position, ready for the signal. But after 2 hours, it still hasn't come. Then, the moment of truth. At the signal, Yunis, Ezzet and their men simultaneously break into the four main offices of the Suez Canal Company. In Alexandria, NASA leaves nothing to chance. He repeats the password a total of 14 times. In the Canal Company headquarters, Yunis informs the European employees that the company has been nationalized. He is polite, but he is also armed.